It is April 12th, 2024, and this is Political Dharma with Alan Zundel. My stories today include the New York Robert F. Kennedy Jr. campaign staff person who said that voting for Kennedy will help elect Trump. I'm going to talk about the controversy that ensued from that revelation and what I think about it. Also, I'm going to give you an update on Kennedy's progress in getting on the ballot in several states, so I have some news on that. And also, I need to correct a story about Tulsi Gabbard and her consideration by the Kennedy campaign as a vice presidential candidate, because for some reason I distorted that when I presented it to you, even though I had already seen the correct story. I had queued up a headline that would have queued me into it. Anyway, my brain didn't work right that day. I made several mistakes I'll be correcting along the way today. Also, Cornel West, the other independent presidential candidate, announced his vice presidential pick this week. And I have a clip of him speaking and introducing her and her speaking a little bit so you can see who she is and hear what she has to say. And an update from that story I had last week about the primaries in which there was an uncommitted or uninstructed vote in the Democratic primaries that indicated dissatisfaction with Joe Biden's policy on concerning Israel. I have a little extra to say about that. And then finally, I will be talking just a little bit about Libertarian Party candidates for their presidential nomination from their party, which that person will be chosen at their national convention at the end of May. So I'm going to say, you know, a little introductory stuff about that. So starting off, though, I do want to apologize if I look a little casual today. I have my hand in a splint from thumb surgery, so buttoning my shirt is a big chore, and I thought maybe you wouldn't mind it being Friday, making it a casual Friday kind of thing. So save me a little extra work getting ready for this. As I said, I made some mistakes last week that I'm going to be correcting and need some updating on some stories. So let me start off, first of all, with a very brief correction, which is at the beginning of my last show, I said it was April 4th, 2024. It was not. I shot the show on the morning of Saturday, April 6th, and I uploaded it on the afternoon of April 6th. I don't know why I said April 4th, but there should have been a sign, if I had caught it, that I need to be more careful because my brain wasn't quite reaching my mouth with the right information, or maybe my brain wasn't processing the information correctly. I don't know. But let's start out with our first story, which is this New York campaign person with the Kennedy campaign who spoke to a group of Republicans and encouraged them to vote for Kennedy as a way to allow Trump to become president. Here is where I think it was first revealed, is this ex post from somebody I don't know anything about, Christopher Webb, and he is identifying the woman as Rita Palmer, the New York State Director for Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s presidential campaign, saying that she gave away their secret playbook for the mission to elect Donald Trump. So I downloaded the video. I noticed that it seemed to have been edited already in a few spaces, so I made those edits more obvious by sticking in little beeps. And then I also cut out a few places myself that I thought were irrelevant to the main point and identified those with a beep so you can hear what she has to say herself and you'll get the gist of it, even though it is a relatively short clip.
So there's no Biden voters in the House, right? No. Okay, good. Things, I guess, will change over time because you do have to only pick one candidate at the end of the day. But the Kennedy voter and the Trump voter, the enemy, our mutual enemy is Biden. Bobby's moving the blues on his own. If the Republicans accepted the fact that New York, Maryland, Chicago, Illinois, California, New Jersey, Connecticut, most of the Northeast is going to go blue, why wouldn't we put our vote to Bobby and at least get rid of Biden and get those 28 electoral votes in New York? The card's a little wrong. It says 26 electoral votes. Give those 28 electoral votes to Bobby rather than to Biden, thereby reducing Biden's 270. And we all know how that works, right? 270 wins the election. If you don't get to 270, if nobody gets to 270, then Congress picks the president. So who are they going to pick? Who are they going to pick if it's a Republican Congress? They'll pick Trump. So we're rid of Biden either way. Does everybody follow that?
Yay.
Okay.
So, of course, the media picked up on this story right away. Here's a article from CNN saying that one of his campaign officials said that her number one priority was preventing Joe Biden from winning the election. Of course, they turned to the Kennedy campaign, who denied that she was a top campaign official. Even the New York field director, she was more a paid consultant to help with ballot access questions. A statement from, who is this, Stephanie Spear of the Kennedy campaign said, Rita Palmer is a ballot access consultant responsible for scheduling volunteer shifts for our upcoming signature collection drive in New York. Not involved in electoral strategy nationally or in New York. This was not a campaign event. Palmer was speaking as a private citizen, and her statements in no way reflect the strategy of the Kennedy campaign, which is to win the White House with votes from both former Trump and former Biden supporters. So next day or a few days later, the Kennedy campaign fired her, in particular for misrepresenting her position in the campaign, saying that she was the top field director in New York when she was merely a consultant helping with ballot access questions. And then later that same day, it came out that this woman, Rita Palmer, was a Trump supporter in 2020. She had attended the January 6th assembly, the rally that Donald Trump held before people went down to the Capitol building, cause all that trouble. She hasn't been identified as having been at the Capitol, but she did go to the rally. So she was a Trump supporter, is a Trump supporter, and obviously this was something she agreed with, the idea that she trying to get Republicans to vote for Kennedy in New York would help Trump get elected, because right now it's a blue state, meaning they generally vote for the Democrat for president. And if Kennedy could, on his own, take away votes from Biden, take away vote, I hate that phrase, but it's the one that people are usually familiar with, meaning that people that might have otherwise voted for Biden would vote for Kennedy. And then if she can encourage Republicans to do the same, even if they preferred Trump to Kennedy, even if they're strong Trump supporters, if you can get a vote for Kennedy, then that Republican vote for Kennedy plus the Democratic vote that Kennedy can get on his own would add up to enough to deprive Biden of a majority in the state, or not even a majority. You don't need a majority. You just need the most votes. So if Kennedy could get more votes than Biden, that would mean that he could get the electoral votes from that state. And if you did that in enough states that neither candidate, neither the major party candidates will get enough electoral votes, you have to have a majority of the electoral votes, which means 270 at least, I think maybe 270 plus one. But around that, if neither candidate gets it, it would be thrown into the House of Representatives, and then each state delegation would get one vote in determining who was going to be president. And the idea was that as all the states are treated equally, and a lot of these low population states like Wyoming and others, they only have one congressperson, but they still get a whole vote in that election. A lot of red states with smaller populations would get votes way out of proportion to larger blue states like California or New York, so that the end result would be a Trump election. Now, a couple of important points about this. There's a lot of important points about this, obviously. The first one, I'm not going to go into all of them, but the two I want to talk about is, the first one is, does this actually represent the intentions of the Kennedy campaign? Is it in Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s plan to run in this election as an independent candidate in order to throw the election into the House of Representatives and then elect Donald Trump? I think that's an easy question to answer. The answer would be no. To me, it's obvious, but I'll spell out the reasons for that. But the second question is, if that did happen, if Kennedy was able to get enough electoral votes to keep either Trump or Biden from getting a majority in the Electoral College, would it be likely to then elect Donald Trump? And I would say that question is a little more uncertain for reasons that I will also explain to you in just a moment. So what we heard from her was this elaborate plan to tell Republicans, even strong Trump supporters, apparently, to vote for Kennedy as a roundabout means of helping to elect Trump. And she seemed to be speaking at a church. If you notice, there was musical equipment on the stage behind her, and they had that big screen TV that they used, as well as a big cross. So to me, that says some kind of evangelical church or a church that's, you know, freestanding, unaffiliated with any of the major mainline denominations, maybe Baptist, you never know. But in any event, it was a church, probably a Republican group, and she was encouraging them to vote for Kennedy in order to elect Trump. So the campaign denied that was their strategy. And from everything I've heard from them so far, they do have, the only difference between what they've been saying and what she said was what would happen in the House of Representatives if it was a contingent election. I heard Kennedy saying that their aim was to have a contingent election, and he expected they would elect him as a compromise candidate instead of either Biden or Trump, because if he's doing well enough to get a lot of electoral votes, obviously there's a lot of dissatisfaction with the major party candidates, and maybe there'll be enough folks in the House of Representatives to swing state delegations toward Kennedy as a way of resolving the impasse and the public dissatisfaction with this two-party hold. That's what he's been saying. Get a contingent election, and he would win in the House. What she said was get a contingent election, and Trump would win. Okay, so there's a difference. Now, why do I think that Kennedy does not? That's not a Kennedy strategy. That's this woman speculating on her own and having her own idea. The very top thing is Kennedy is an intelligent person, and if he wants to help Trump win, there's a lot easier ways of accomplishing that. You know, he did not have to get involved in the Democratic primary and then become an independent candidate and have this whole ballot access campaign trying to raise money, find a vice presidential candidate, bring lawsuits against states in order to get his name on the ballot. He didn't have to do all that. All he had to do was endorse Trump, donate money to Trump, get other people to donate money to Trump, and then campaign for him. Much simpler. Why would anyone go through that whole convoluted process with a strange strategy like that in order to help elect Trump? It does not make any sense. It does make sense for someone like this woman to have some bizarre notion about the likely effects of trying to tell people to follow this scheme. And in general, when I've worked for reforms to try to institute new methods of voting, excuse me, my voice is getting dry. Sorry for the banging. That's my cup. Have a little sip of water. I've often heard people say that, okay, with this new method of voting, you could have parties telling people to vote strategically, which is kind of counterintuitive to how an ordinary voter would just simply pick the candidate they like most and give them the highest ranking or whatever, or their first pick, instead to vote for someone else to help elect a different candidate. I've always heard people talk about those kind of schemes, but they never made sense for the simple reason that in order to get a lot of voters to coordinate their votes in a counterintuitive fashion, that is, you want Trump to win, so you vote for Kennedy. In order to vote in a counterintuitive fashion, you got to get lots of voters to do that, so you got to get the message out to a lot of voters. And what's the likely outcome of talking to lots of voters about this secret plan? Is that it's going to get out, as this video got out, and the effect on Democrats would be any poll that Kennedy was able to make for potential Biden voters would be offset by those potential Biden voters being afraid that this Kennedy campaign is a scheme to elect Trump, and therefore they would be more likely to vote for Biden. So the whole idea that he's going to automatically pull from Biden and then get Trump voters to do this strategy, as soon as this strategy comes out, a lot of fence sitters who lean towards Biden are more likely to vote for Biden. So you can't do a secret plan that's counterintuitive and requires you to talk to a lot of people and also keep it secret. It just doesn't work. So on that score, I think it's clear this is not Kennedy's plan. But the separate question is, would this be likely to elect Trump or elect Kennedy? Now, I haven't heard a detailed explanation of why Kennedy thinks that this would result in his election in a contingent election. I'd like to dig that up and find it, and so I could critique it. But my sense is that given that just about everyone who's going to be in the Congress is going to be either a Democrat or Republican, they're more likely to vote in lockstep for either Biden or Trump. Is it likely to be Trump? That depends on a lot of things. That depends upon the composition of each state's delegation to the House of Representatives, that is, whether there's more Democrats than Republicans. And we don't know yet who those people will be, because it will be the people in the new Congress elected after this upcoming November election who are making that decision. We don't know who they're going to be. So to figure this out, I would first of all have to know who's going to be in the Congress, what the party composition of each delegation would be, and then how they'd be likely to vote one way or the other. Now, it's also possible, and I will be following this and trying to figure it out as time advances, if Kennedy's doing well, if he continues to do well, because this contingent election could become a possibility, I'd like to know that. But I'd first have to get a sense of who's running for office in the various states, who's likely to win in the various states. I mean, there's 435 members of the House of Representatives, and they're all up for election this year like they are every 2 years. So we could have a very different composition, especially since a half a dozen states only have one person in the congressional delegation. You change the party of that person, and all of a sudden, you know, you've changed the whole dynamic of this. One of those 50 states' votes would go to the other party. So I'll be looking at this as we go along, trying to figure out what's likely to happen in the upcoming congressional election when we get a little closer to November, in order to determine how likely it is that any congressional delegation will vote one way or the other, either for Trump or for Biden or possibly for Kennedy. A lot can happen between now and then. As I've often said, and as I'm sure you know, the very unusual election. The candidates are not very popular. The major party candidates are not very popular. Lots of the 2020 election, Democrats won more seats than the polls predicted because of this whole abortion issue coming up with the overturning of Roe versus Wade. So who knows what's going to happen? Criminal trials for Trump, Biden being so old, the terrible things happening in Gaza. You don't know what's going to come up. You don't know how it's going to affect the election. You don't know what the composition of Congress is going to be if the time comes when they have to vote on who's going to be president if the Electoral College fails to elect somebody. So long story there, but it was an important one, I think, and it's a good one to think about because that's very important to Kennedy's case, that he can either win outright in the Electoral College or that failing that, that he could get enough votes in the House of Representatives to win. And for some people, it's important to say this is not going to result in a Trump election. There's probably people on the other side as well who think they don't want it to result in a Biden election. And of course, Kennedy's running in the blue states as well as the red states. So, you know, they could go around and say to Democrats, hey, if you vote for Kennedy, you're likely to vote for Biden. They could do the exact reverse of what this woman was trying to do. So that's my take on it. I don't think it's the Kennedy campaign strategy for reasons that I think are obvious. I'm not sure exactly how the Kennedy strategy is about the contingent election, but that's something to watch as we go forward. So up next, let's see. We did have a new state being added to the rosters of states in which Kennedy had enough signatures to get on the ballot. This time it's Nebraska. They announced earlier this week that Kennedy has enough signatures to be on the ballot in Nebraska, which brings them to a total of 11 states, I'm pretty sure. On their own, his campaign has gotten on the ballot in Utah, or they have enough signatures to get on the ballot in Utah, New Hampshire, Hawaii, Nevada, and North Carolina, and Idaho last week, I think. All of these, I think only Utah is for sure where they have certified it. All the rest, it waits on this state, Secretary of State, or whatever elections official decides this, whether the signatures are valid or there's some kind of, you know, legal problem. They are having a problem in Nevada, as I reported on last week. And then there were four states that the American Values 2024 Super PAC also got enough signatures for. They were Georgia, Arizona, Michigan, and South Carolina. Now, several of these are swing states, which is very important. So those have also been challenged, and they're not yet, there's no assurance yet that they will actually get Kennedy on the ballot in those states as well. But if it all works out well, he will be on the ballot, at least in these 11 states and probably many more going forward. In the meantime, let me go back to what I said last week about Kennedy and getting on the ballot in New York, that the New York state had a very short window for getting signatures to get on the ballot. And I misspoke. I said, you can't do signatures later than a certain date and they have to get in by a certain date. Well, they can't do them earlier than a certain date is what I should have said. There is a time before which you cannot start gathering signatures and a time when it ends. And those are very short. So let me pull up the story that can show you what the deadline in New York so you can see it for yourself. Let me transition here. Sorry, working with my left hand is not always easy peasy. It starts April 16th, which is coming up this week in just 4 days, when they can start collecting signatures in New York, and they have to have them in by May 28th, which is less than 2 months after that. So about 6 weeks or so, they have to gather 45,000 signatures in New York to get on the ballot. So I did want to correct that and give you a specification of what that window was. Trying to transition once again and having a little bit of trouble. There is a court case in New York that I noticed. Again, this is on Ballot Access News, which is a really good source for following some of these developments regarding Kennedy getting on the ballot. And there's going to be a court case of an independent who says that window is too short. So that may result in a change of that window, giving them more time to collect signatures. Not sure whether or not it applies to the presidential campaign. I assume it does. And if that case turns out well, then maybe Kennedy has a little more time to do that. I also, when I was talking about New York and their window last week, by the end of my discussion of that, I said Texas instead of New York for some reason. Again, I don't understand always how my brain works to come out of it, but I think it was because Texas has a deadline in May as well. So New York and Texas are the next couple of states that have deadlines where they have to have signatures in. Let's see, New York, as I said, the deadline is May 28th, and in Texas, the deadline is May 13th. So, and there they have to get like 113,000. I don't remember, is that for an independent candidate or a political party? I think they were trying to do a political party, but they couldn't use the We the People name. Not sure what's happening there. But coming up, New York deadline in May, a New York deadline in Texas, a deadline in May in Texas, a deadline in May in New York. And I think the next one after that is Montana, which is either at the end of May or the beginning of April. I don't exactly remember what that was. So trying to get Tulsi Gabbard's picture up and it's not working so far. Don't know why, but it doesn't matter. I can put up a news article about this. Now, I said last week that the story about Tulsi Gabbard being in conversations with Kennedy about being his vice presidential candidate was, she said recently, she's been giving a book tour, and she said to one of her interviewers that they had been in conversations, but it didn't work out. But, well, the headline actually was, let me show you this. So what she actually said, and I had a newspaper clipping ready last week, but I didn't cue it up, that she had turned down. She was asked, and then she had turned down the offer of being his vice presidential candidate. She said, I met with Kennedy several times, and we've become good friends. He asked if I would be his running mate. After careful consideration, I respectfully declined. So the upshot of this is that Tulsi Gabbard, yes, was offered the role of vice presidential candidate, but for some reason she said no, which is very different than saying they were been in conversations and both sides had decided against it, which it didn't work out, which is what I had said last week. Actually, they offered it. According to her, she turned it down, which makes me even more curious. If they had expected her to say yes, and back in January when I reported there was a rumor that he was going to ask her because he had a campaign rally scheduled in Hawaii, which is where she's from, that was when all this took part. I don't know. But let's move on from that story now that I've corrected it. Tulsi Gabbard says she was offered the role, she turned it down. Don't know why, she didn't really say. Now, speaking of vice presidential candidates, it was important for Kennedy to choose one because lots of states require that you list a vice presidential candidate when you are gathering signatures to get your name on the ballot as an independent presidential candidate. So this applies to independent candidate Cornel West as well. And this week, Cornel West announced that he had chosen Melina Abdullah as his vice presidential candidate. She is a professor at the University of California, Los Angeles, a union activist, and somebody important in the Black Lives Matters organization. I guess they've got different organizations in different cities, and they are somehow affiliated. This is not like, there's two different Black Lives Matters things, and there's a dispute about them. But anyway, she's been involved in the Black Lives Matters movement and a number of other movements. She's known him for quite a while, was actually, a student of his at one point. So he introduced her on the Tavis Smiley Show this last week, and I have a clip from that show where he introduces her and she speaks a little bit about herself. So let's roll that.
I am very blessed. It is my great joy to announce my dear sister. She was a great, one of the great freedom fighters of her generation, one of the great love warriors of her generation. She's a doctor, she's a professor. Most importantly, she's a lover of the people. Her name is Melina Abdullah. Sister Melina Abdullah.
I come into this as one who seeks to abide by the will of the Most High and to do righteous work. If I have a mantra, I do have a mantra. My mantra is just do the work and live as righteously as possible. And so that's what I seek to do. But people of faith all want the same thing. We want peace, we want truth, we want love, and we want justice. Yeah. I think that both of us want to disrupt the narrative that you have only two choices, mm-hmm. or want to say, you know, the world tries to tell us that we're tethered to certain ideas that we don't have to be tethered to. We can be expansive and imaginative, right? We can remember that we live in a world of abundance where people can have all of what they need and most of what they want. And so we enter this really as faithful people, since we've been talking about faith, as faithful people who are not more pragmatist than we are faithful. And so we're building a campaign where we say, you know, you should be able to have just one job and earn enough to pay your rent or your mortgage, right? We should have an educational system where education for all, and I mean all the way from preschool through grad school, should be accessible to everyone. And the kind of education that you get is liberatory, right? Mm-hmm. We can have the kind of world where we say, you know, safety comes from building strong communities, not from putting more police on trains and buses and in schools, right? Our entire platform is built on this idea of truth, love, and justice, that we can vision and build a world that is fit for our people, that is fit for future generations. And that's what we're running based on. We're running based on what we know we can have when we all work for it.
So as I said, that clip came from an interview on the Tavis Smiley Show, which you can find on his YouTube channel. It's about an hour long, so this is a very short segment from it that I presented to you. I will give you a caution, though. When it first starts out, there's some problems with the sound quality in the interview. There's some echo when he's talking, and then they have to adjust the sound levels, and then later on there's other sound problems. So, but if you are patient through that part of it, it's a longer interview where she says has a lot more to say, and he has a lot more. Cornel West has a lot more to say, too. So I'll be following the West campaign as we proceed, see how he's doing. So far, he's only got enough signatures. No, he didn't even need enough signatures. He's on the ballot in Utah, and he is the nominee of very small parties in three other states, Alaska, Oregon, and South Carolina, either South Carolina or North Carolina. I forget which. I think it's South Carolina, but he's on the ballot, assured, in four states, and who knows, that may be outdoing Kennedy if a lot of Kennedy's signatures end up not working for him. So I want to go back to last week's show when I talked about the primaries in the major parties, And I said that they were showing dissatisfaction with the major party candidates because Nikki Haley was still getting over 10% of the vote, even though she's no longer in the Republican primary. And on the Democratic side, I said that votes that were marked either uncommitted or uninstructed in three of the states a week ago last Tuesday showed over 10% of that as well. And all of them except New York showing some dissatisfaction with the Biden candidacy, especially his policy regarding Israel and Gaza. But I said in New York, as you can see on your screen if you're watching this, that Biden did get 91.5% of the vote, the highest of any of the four states on that Tuesday's primaries. And the other category, which included Marianne Williamson and Dean Phillips, got 8.5% of the vote, which is different than the other states showing higher support for Biden. And I said, I think they did not have the option of some kind of uncommitted or uninstructed. But what I went back and relooked at that, and what I found out was that in New York, because they do not have those options, there were a lot of blank ballots that were turned in, and there was a campaign to get people to leave the vote for president in the Democratic primary blank in order to show the same kind of dissatisfaction with Biden's Israel policy. And I think when you readjusted the amounts that each option had, it brings Biden down from that 91.5% to just 79%. And then the blank ballots would be 12%, which would not only be ballots regarding this Israel policy, but probably a lot of ballots where people either didn't vote or couldn't decide or didn't care or just overlooked it for some reason. Maybe not a lot, but a few. So at least 12% blank, which means a lot of those were trying to indicate dissatisfaction with Biden's policy. And Marianne Williamson and Dean Phillips still got about the same as they had originally on. So altogether, much higher level of dissatisfaction with Biden than had been shown in my original presentation. So that's most of the stories. I got one more left, and we're already going over time, but I hope this keeps your interest. Libertarian Party. Now, I had a viewer who wanted me to cover the Libertarian candidates. Let me bring that up so you can see that as well. He commented on my show, a fellow named Jack Gannon, asking to cover the candidates, or at least make you aware of the names of the candidates for the Libertarian Party. And since his comment has those up there, those of you who are watching can see them right in front of you. Chase Oliver, Lars Mapstead, Mike Termott, Jacob Hornberger, Joshua Smith, Michael Rechtenwald, Charles Belay, Art Oliver, I don't know if he's related to Chase Oliver or not, and Robert Sansone. I don't know much about any of them, so I'm not going to try to, you know, give you backgrounds on each of them at this moment. I will be trying to watch that election, and especially after the nomination in their party is over at the end of May, I will be talking about that. But I also noticed, there's a news article which mentioned the Libertarian candidate Chase Oliver as having won five of the state primaries in the Libertarian Party. Now, their state primaries do not bind delegates to the convention to voting for that particular candidate. But it means that when several episodes ago, I think it was maybe a couple months ago now, I talked about the Libertarian Party and their presidential nomination process. I said that the Von Mises caucus had pretty much control over all the delegates who were going to go to the national convention, and they had their candidate, Michael Rechtenwald, as their choice. So probably that was going to freeze out Robert Kennedy from getting a Libertarian Party nomination. But this says that another candidate, Chase Oliver, has been, they're just having like these preference polls for the presidential candidates, and Chase Oliver won five of them. I also noticed in a couple of other news stories that some other candidates in the Libertarian Party, or at least one, Lars Mapstead, had also one of the state parties. So that shows some dissension within the Libertarian Party as to who they're going to support. Maybe Kennedy can get through just because there's division among the various candidates and the delegates decide, well, maybe we should go with some big name or not, but we don't know for sure who's going to be the candidate. Also, the same person who made that suggestion, he said something about their strategy, which I thought was interesting, which was, that the Libertarians are going to focus on winning at least one electoral vote. Now, this would be wise of them because it would indicate that they have growing support in the country by getting one electoral vote at least. It makes them seem a much more serious party and would get more people to take a look at them. How they plan to do this is that in Maine and Nebraska, unlike the other states, they actually split up their electoral college votes. You get, I think you get two for whichever presidential candidate wins the statewide vote, gets the most votes statewide. But then the other electoral votes are delegated according to which candidate gets the most votes in their congressional districts. So a candidate could get, there could be split. Maine could give some electoral votes to Trump, some to Kennedy. Same thing for Nebraska. So that's an interesting way to do this. A little bit different strategy, and I thought it was worth mentioning as one of the things that could affect the outcome of this election. Let me transition once more to myself, and I think that is it for this show. Thank you for watching and being patient through this whole show as I kind of fumbled with some of the transitions, trying to change slides with my left hand, and also without my glasses, I'm looking, trying to see what the slides actually say in fine print when I have to change between them. So if you did like the show, despite all that, please hit the like button. If you want to make sure you don't miss a show, subscribe to the show. I love it when people have comments to make, especially if they're adding additional information that I didn't know, or they're making suggestions, or they're even criticizing me. I'm interested to hear what you have to say. So thanks for those of you who are commenting. Also, thank you very much for those of you who have made donations to the show. I'm not going to use any of those for myself personally. I'm going to use them to try to improve the show and pay for things like my website and my email and and upgrading the production values of the show over time. So thank you who have donated. If you'd like to donate something and you can afford it, you can go to my website, www.politicaldharma.com, and right there on the homepage, there's a big fat button, maybe a little too ostentatious, that says, click on this, and you can donate through a secure PayPal link. So politicaldharma.com, you can donate that way. Thank those of you who have. And I expect to see you again next week. Or no, I don't expect to see you at all. I expect you can see me. Maybe I'll see some of you. But you can see me if you tune in again next week when I have more news on especially the alternative presidential campaigns outside of the two major parties, which has been my area of interest for the last several months, and I will continue on it going into the future. So thanks a lot for watching, and that's it for today, and let's sign off. Bye. With ease, I see the chains are breaking. We gained our focus. The moves we're making will prove to determine our self-worth as a passenger on this vehicle earth.